Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to tackle a subject of utmost importance because there are tens of millions of people suffering from this condition, in particular women, but also often men. And it's a condition that is baffling and challenging and very difficult to treat, given our conventional arsenal. There's no magic bullet for treatment of fibromyalgia. And that is today's subject. And we're going to talk to an expert. She is Dr. Ginevra Lipton. Dr. Lipton has a book coming out on the subject of fibromyalgia, The Fibro Manual, A Complete Fibromyalgia Treatment Guide for You and Your Doctor, which is not yet out, but will be out soon and can be pre-ordered now at Amazon.com. She herself has an experience, a personal experience with fibromyalgia, which we'll learn about. In her efforts to overcome this condition, she learned a lot. And she is board-certified in internal medicine. She practices in Oregon at the Frida Center for Fibromyalgia. We'll find out why it's called the Frida Center momentarily. And she has formulated a comprehensive treatment plan for fibromyalgia. So without further ado, here's Dr. Lipton. It's a pleasure having you as a guest here on Intelligent Medicine.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk with you about what I call the F word of medicine, fibromyalgia.
Indeed. So why the F word? Because, I mean, as Rodney Dangerfield once said, it don't get no respect.
Exactly. Well, I think there's been a lot of stigma around fibromyalgia, primarily because it was an illness that was thought to be affecting women, and there was sort of a fall on their head, and, you know, there was no objective abnormalities, and doctors really want to see, you know, abnormal lab tests. They want to see abnormal x-rays to really verify that a condition is real. So there's been this whole controversy for about a century, you know, is fibromyalgia real? And that's, I think, where the kind of stigma has been stemmed from. And luckily, that is now starting to change. But when I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia, it was right in the kind of midst of the heat of that controversy.
The skeptical era. And
yes.
Okay, so there are one of the objective metrics for fibromyalgia is there are these charts which show pressure points or ouch points, and doctors are instructed to diagnose it based on sensitive pressure meters that they apply to these, I think, 17 pairs of ouch points on the body. And,
right.
You know, that's one of the criteria by which it's diagnosed. Is that a good criterion? You know, somebody says, I'm achy, I'm in pain. So, well, no, you don't really have fibromyalgia. You just have something else.
Well, right.
Is there really a dividing line between, you know, ordinary daily achiness, stiffness, and pain and full-blown fibromyalgia?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the diagnostic criteria we have right now, which are those tender points throughout the body, that combined with a history of fatigue and a lot of muscle pain that just doesn't go away. I mean, it's natural to kind of have some pain here and there. Fibromyalgia is really persistent muscle pain that's not getting better, and a lot of tenderness on your muscles when you're pressed. So I think for right now, they're good diagnostic criteria. There's going to be better ones coming up in the next few years. They are really pretty close to some lab tests that might be diagnostic for fibromyalgia, but it's still early days yet for those.
And what type of lab tests might those be? Like measuring cytokines,
yes,
you know,
exactly.
IL-16 or, you know, IL-2 or the various humors that circulate around the body that create inflammation?
Right. It's actually specific patterns of those inflammatory markers that are pretty consistent in people with fibromyalgia compared to people that don't have fibromyalgia. So I think ultimately that is going to be where the diagnostic, final test, objective test comes. But where things started to really change is about a decade ago when there was finally some research evidence that showed that people with fibromyalgia really were experiencing the pain that they described. Because pain is inherently a subjective measure. You know, we can't look at someone and see that their nervous system is in pain. We just have to go based on what they're telling us. And that is hard as a researcher and as a physician to try and figure out, well, what's going on in this person? They look okay to me, but they're telling me that they're hurting. And in 2002, some researchers found that if you look at MRI studies that show blood flow in the brain, that people with fibromyalgia have much more sensitive nervous systems, in that a little light compression on their thumb read as very high pain signals in the brain. And so finally they were able to see, hey, there's something not right in how that pain signal is getting from, you know, the thumb to the brain. And that was the final kind of key, the kind of nail in the coffin, so to speak, of the fibromyalgia isn't real, because finally they were able to show something documented. Now, can you use that for diagnosis? Not really. Not everybody's going to get into an MRI machine and you know, have their thumb compressed to see at what point they have pain. That's really more for research purposes. But it did really, it was kind of the start of the change in attitude about fibromyalgia. A lot more research, pharmaceutical interest. The drug companies finally had a target, so there was more kind of development of treatments, and that is really where did advance us. Kind of
it put it on the map, and you certainly whenever there's a drug, usually what ensues is popularization of the diagnosis for which the drug is earmarked. So an example of which is ED, erectile. You know, it used to be like, well, you know, I'm not too hot in the sack, but then it became a medical diagnosis because we now have targeted medications.
Low testosterone. Yeah,
exactly.
Like then. But that's actually, in the case of fibromyalgia, really, it was actually wonderful.
Beneficial.
Because
yeah.
We really needed to get on the map. And so
Indeed.
Now, I would say most doctors, particularly younger doctors and providers, do believe that fibromyalgia is real. And that is progress. That is different from when I was in medical school and suffering from unexplained muscle pain and trying to figure out what was going on with myself.
So when they say it's all in your head, in a sense, it is. It's actually, it's not where you perceive the pain in your muscles, but it's maybe an abnormality in brain processing, possibly?
Absolutely. And I think that's really kind of the end result of a chain reaction that also starts in the brain, but in a different part of the brain. So here's, in a nutshell, what I know about fibromyalgia, looking through over 6,000 studies, learning from the inside with my own, you know, experience and then with patients. What seems to trigger things is a trauma or some stressful experience on the body that sets off a chronic fight or flight nervous system activation. So another word for that is the stress response, or we learn in medical school, the sympathetic nervous system. That gets overactivated and it kind of goes haywire. So it's supposed to activate, and then when there is no stress, go, you know, calm down. But it doesn't in fibromyalgia. 24 hours a day, it is continually activating the body. And what that does is it causes us to tense our muscles. It affects how our nerves are processing those pain signals. It interferes with our ability to get into deep quality sleep. And so you can kind of see the cascade that would be set off if you're never getting into deep quality sleep. You're never getting the rest that your brain or your body needs. It could really spiral into fatigue, muscle pain, brain fog. You know, think about how you felt if you missed two nights of sleep in a row, or how you feel when you, you know, mothers of young infants, where they're totally sleep deprived. That feeling is what is going on all the time in fibromyalgia.
Mm-hmm. And so how about your own personal experience of that? You know, you were a young med student, you know, overworked and overtaxed, on call, studying all the time. And so how did that manifest for you?
Yeah, so I just thought my symptoms were because of all those things, because I was overworked. It started with neck pain, and I was exercising in the gym and doing some weightlifting, and I just felt that kind of searing pain in my neck, And I'd injured myself before, so I thought I would get better, but it just didn't get better. And then it started to spread, and it was like the rest of my back was hurting. And then all over, all of my muscles just felt really achy all the time. And it sort of progressed over several months to the point where I was so exhausted I could barely get out of bed. And I, really, the breaking point for me was when I couldn't even really lift my arms up to wash my hair in the shower. And I was like, this is not normal. You know, I what is going on? So I went to my primary care doctor, and she said, I don't know. Nothing's wrong with you. And she did some labs, thyroid,
right.
You know, CBC, all the usual.
No arthritis, so no, you know, you didn't have, you know, like an inflammatory condition.
Exactly. So all, you know, I didn't have lupus. I didn't have hypothyroidism. I wasn't anemic. She's like, well, maybe you just need to sleep more, eat better. And I tried to do all those things, and I just, nothing was helping. And I was sleeping really fitfully. I'd wake up in the morning and just feel more tired than when I went to bed.
And that's one of the hallmarks of fibromyalgia, because often when I'm trying to diagnose it, I say, when you wake up in the morning, do you feel like you've been run over by a truck? It's like, yeah.
Exactly. And if somebody tells me that they feel like they feel rested in the morning, I know that I can move on to look for a different diagnosis, because that is not, people with fibromyalgia consistently report poor sleep.
Unrefreshing sleep, I think, is the medical term.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. So I had to take a year leave of absence from medical school, and I went to see some of the top specialists in Boston. That's where I was in school, and I saw several rheumatologists. All of them said, we don't know. Not any of them actually gave me the diagnosis of fibromyalgia. I started seeing a chiropractor because I was trying to help, you know, deal with the neck situation. And it was actually my chiropractor who said, I think this might be fibromyalgia, and kind of started me on that pathway. And I realized very quickly that Western medicine had very little to offer me. So here I am, a medical student in Western medicine, having an illness that many of my professors were telling me in class does not exist. They were saying, oh, it's, you know, fibromyalgia isn't real. And I was left to sort of just fend for myself. And that's unfortunately where a lot of patients still find themselves right now, because doctors just don't have much to offer. There are things that help, but I think most, if not kind of in, on the radar of most doctors, unfortunately. So I actually had a lot more success when I started to see naturopaths, and I started to do some specialized massage therapy. It was sort of when I moved into the more integrative medicine, that's where I started to see benefit, and I started to kind of get better enough that I could head back to school.
Yeah, so it, you know, you certainly experienced that whole disempowering sensation of, you know, you have all of Western medicine at your disposal. You're supposed to be an omniscient scientist, and yet you had to you look outside conventional medicine to get the answers to this.
Yeah, absolutely. It was very surreal. I felt like I was leading two separate lives. And then when I did go back to school, I didn't want to tell anybody that I had fibromyalgia, so I sort of felt like I was an undercover medical student, you know?
Yeah, because of the stigma that might be attached to that, because you're supposed to be an Iron Woman.
Exactly.
You know, it's enough that there's a lot of sexism in medicine, but you're supposed to be more macho than the males.
Exactly.
And to show some inclination towards weakness or fatigue, that would be showing your vulnerability.
Absolutely. So I didn't. I didn't tell anybody, and I just, you know, I made it through school, and with those things that I had found that helped me, that specialized form of massage therapy, which is called myofascial release, that really, really helped me with pain management through school. And then kind of working on nutrition, changing my diet, reducing the inflammatory foods I was eating. All of those things are actually still a huge part of how I treat fibromyalgia today. But as I progressed through kind of my medical training and my own personal health journey, I found additional things that helped, and some of them actually did come from Western medicine. So there is this sort of perfect melding, you know, intelligent medicine, so to speak.
Yeah, like
where
that,
you
like
can,
that.
Exactly like that, where you can meld those two things, kind of the best of both worlds. And I feel like that is the only successful treatment for fibromyalgia comes with both of those. You can't do it just with Western medicine, and you can't do it just with kind of alternative or complementary things. There has to be somewhere in the middle. Because the sleep issue, that piece is very challenging to deal with kind of with more natural approaches. That's a sleep is a really hard thing to fix. So right. Getting a sleep study is really important. Trying to take away medicines that are interfering with sleep and trying to add in medications or supplements that improve deep sleep, that's where kind of the Western medicine piece is really necessary in managing fibromyalgia.
Okay, we're going to drill down on all these individual components in a few moments, but could you mention why you now have called your center the FRIDA Center, F-R-I-D-A? I guess that means you're honoring the memory of the Mexican artist Frida Kahlo.
Yes,
and
yes.
Who is someone who, if I remember the movie correctly, it was a great movie, one of my favorite movies.
It is a great movie.
Who was always in a lot of pain, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She had a terrible accident in a bus in Mexico City and, broke her spine and her pelvis, I think, and she was always mm-hmm. in excruciating pain. Is that the reason you chose that name?
Yes, and in fact, it goes a little bit deeper in that there's some theories, there's some rheumatologists that looking back through her journals noticed that she described a lot of fatigue as well, and so there's a theory that perhaps she actually had fibromyalgia. So she sort of has always been my hero as somebody who certainly dealt with extreme pain throughout her life, but also really had, I think, fibromyalgia, and she's sort of my inspiration for the clinic and for my life personally to kind of show that you can still really right. live a bold, beautiful, big life.
Right, a heroic transcendence and certainly a feminist icon.
Exactly.
And since this is a predominantly female disease, what are the statistics on fibromyalgia in terms of male-to-female ratio and the prevalence of it? I know it's hard to say, but...
Right, right. Well, so that's kind of ever-changing as we're learning more about how many men actually do have fibromyalgia. We think right now about 10 million Americans have fibromyalgia, and about 85% of those are female. I think probably as we get better at diagnosing fibromyalgia in men, I think that number will probably reduce, and I think it'll probably be more like an 80-20 split. And with males, we tend to see it in folks that are coming back from combat.
Mm-hmm.
So people that men that have PTSD have a very high likelihood, about a 50% chance of having fibromyalgia.
I once had an airline pilot who, in addition to being a top airline pilot, was also head of the pilots union, who had severe fibromyalgia.
Wow.
And but it's interesting. He said the only time that he actually felt okay was when he was flying a plane. So somehow, when he was locked in, really locked
yep.
in, he felt okay. It kind of distracted him from his pain level. But when he tried to relax, he would be in a lot of pain.
Absolutely. He'd kind of get in the zone, but then as soon as he wasn't distracted, yeah, I think that's pretty common, definitely.
So, but how about this notion, after in the wake of these tragic shootings in Paris, people use the meme, we're all Parisians, or je suis Charlie, and along the lines of that, is it possible that fibromyalgia is a spectrum disorder where most people, to some extent or another, may experience symptoms like this from time to time or to a greater or lesser degree? And of course, the other may be totally free of these symptoms, but some of the lessons that you apply to patients strictly diagnosed with meet all the criteria for fibromyalgia might be applicable to people with ordinary, everyday pain, sleep disorders, and so on.
Yes, absolutely. I think you're right that there is sort of a spectrum component to it, and I certainly do see patients that have very much kind of milder symptoms, and then others that have more severe symptoms. And then I see folks that really have more localized pain, maybe just low back pain. And a lot of the treatments that I recommend for fibromyalgia, that more kind of global pain, will also help for that more localized pain. Mm-hmm. So I think SP are more able to kind of talk about it and feel more comfortable talking about it with their physicians. Maybe they will kind of learn more that it truly is on a spectrum.
Okay, we divide these podcasts into two parts, but before we check out for part one, can you just outline briefly the four R's of your treatment approach? And then in part two, when our listeners rejoin us, we can drill down and look at each and every individual component. What are those?
Sure. Yeah. So my overall approach is, if you're looking at things being triggered by the fight or flight nervous system kind of going haywire, I try and start at the beginning with what I call rest. So that's trying to activate the opposite of the fight or flight nervous system, that rest relaxation response, along with improving sleep quality. So that is kind of in the first R, rest. Then I work on repair, which is improving both kind of structural repair, so working on the actual muscles and painful tissue themselves. That's where myofascial release comes in, along with nutritional repair and kind of improving the ability of the body to digest and absorb nutrients. And then rebalance, which is trying to adjust the problems with energy production, hormone imbalance, and inflammation that's caused by a chronic stress response. And finally, reduce any remaining pain, fatigue, or fog symptoms. So kind of the last step is really just symptom-oriented and trying to reduce those specific symptoms that might be still interfering with someone's life.
Okay, you've set the table very nicely for our discussion in part two of the specific components of a treatment for fibromyalgia. So let's alert our listeners to the fact that we'll be continuing in part two with our discussion of fibromyalgia with Dr. Ginevra Lipton, who is a physician in Oregon. She's got a website, which is fridacenter.com, FRIDcenter.com. Lots of resources there. We will continue momentarily. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.